Are you hosting? Or am I still up? Still
last
hosting?
Year.
I popped right up. It says host me. I'll get out of there.
Peter, what are you doing with the chair?
What's your command? If we can, I'd rather not host.
You'd rather not what?
Host.
No, I'm going to do it. It should be right. Oh, how did that happen? Mr. Moore, can we? I think they have been scheduled back your site for the facility, but I don't know how that happened.
I made him in an alternative post in the last minute just to get to that.
Oh, can you switch it back? Because he wants me to roll that.
You bet I do.
Okay, well, if you join the Zoom, you will be promoted to a panelist, I believe.
Mute our.
When Dr. Cipher pauses in promoting folks. We still have some devices with microphones on here.
Mr. Gilby, can you hear us over the internet? You were chatting that you couldn't hear us before. Great, you can hear us. Wonderful. Mrs. Eckhart, would you care to unmute yourself and perhaps perform a remote audio check for us?
I'm actually in the school building. I don't know if that matters or not, but check.
We'll turn you up a little bit.
Appreciate it.
let me know. We've got the reason it's fine.
The board members are Good afternoon. It is 5 o'clock. I will call to order this special meeting of the Gibraltar Area School Board scheduled for this time, Thursday, December 16th. We'll begin the meeting with a call to order and a roll call alphabetically, please.
Carrier here.
Helm here.
Piatt here.
Cipher present.
Sherman here.
Ward here.
Let the record show that Mr. Schreier is excused. He is out of town and out of remote. So that we understand the premises of a special meeting, I've received some mails wondering, how is a special meeting called? Wisconsin statutes 120.11 parenthesis 2 parenthesis A permits that a special school board meeting may be called upon the written request of a school board member filed with either the clerk or the school board president. The threshold for calling a special meeting is that there is an urgent matter that must be decided prior to the next regularly scheduled meeting. Meaning that there's some action, there is something that will happen within the school district that cannot wait until the next regular meeting. I have some people saying to me, everything's on a regular schedule, why can't it wait? This is the check and balance within our local government, and this applies to special meeting status in the statute applies to all governmental units. Special meetings may be called as a check and a balance on decisions. Sometimes we would say, I don't agree. It's not the question. The question is, there's something of urgency that must be decided and must be considered prior to the next regularly scheduled meeting. That's why we're here. Such a request was made. It fits the threshold of urgency. An action will take place on Monday and on January 3rd that precedes the January 10th next meeting date. I see a few nods. We're understanding the rationale of why a special meeting. They should not be usual because typically we can get our business conducted within a regular schedule. We have two agenda items for the afternoon. The first is to review Door County public health information regarding the vaccination of children ages 5 to 11 and reconsider the board's vote to unmask it. We're informed by Robert's rules. And Robert's rules are applied in Wisconsin governmental bodies as to what does reconsideration mean? A reconsideration is not another call of the vote on the same issue, but it says that if there was any reason for which, under which that body did not have all information, and it would be reasonable for them to reconsider information they did not have, then a call to reconsider may be in order. Robert's rules tell us that in order to reconsider, a member of the board who voted in favor of the motion that's asked to be reconsidered must move a reconsideration of the board on that issue. That is a motion and a second to reconsider. According to Robert's rules, if that motion doesn't pass, there is no reconsideration. That motion holds and the issue is decided on the lack of support for reconsideration. If we approve reconsideration, then all that we are concerned with is the motion that was made on Monday night. The exact language of that motion. We will hear information that is relative to the public health information as posted that may better inform the board with regard to the motion that was presented. That motion then may be reconsidered, or will be reconsidered if the board approves reconsideration in the language of its initial passage. No amendments, no changes. It's an up and down on the initial motion that was made, seconded, and approved. I'm watching eyeballs go side to side. Does that comport with what I know? It comports with Robert's rules, and it comports with the statute. At this point in time, then, on this posting to review Door County public health information regarding the vaccination of children ages 5 to 11 and reconsider the board's vote on masking, does a member of the board who voted in the affirmative of that motion wish to move reconsideration?
The statement I'd like to read.
You can't. It's not appropriate this time.
Except you're not stating that there was information not provided to the board. You are not admitting to the misinformation you provided.
Mr. Sherman, you're out of order to the procedure of this reconsideration motion, or the lack of. If there is no approval to reconsider, your information is moot. On behalf of the community, as the maker of the initial motion, and to assure that no persons can say that the board did not consider all information, I move to reconsider the motion. Is there a second?
I will second if I'm able, as a person who did not vote in favor.
I wish that you were, but you're not.
Okay.
I'll go a step further. I encourage it.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion made by Cypher, a second by Ward to reconsider the motion, which read to direct administration to continuing implementation of these protocols, school cleaning, personal hand washing, appropriate social distancing, federally required masking of all persons on school buses, and optional masking with parent guardian permission beginning December 20th for students and staff in grade 7-12 and January 3rd for students and staff in grades K-6. Board members in favor of reconsideration, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Let me see a hand count. Those in favor? Thank you. The motion passes. We will reconsider the motion. I will restate that in the reconsideration of this motion, we will hear information related to public health information regarding the vaccination of children. At the end of that information and our discussion, we will hold a vote on the motion that we are reconsidering.
And only that motion?
Only that motion, not amended. If the motion passes, it is the action of the board. If the motion fails, then we return to the status quo that we have without the motion, and we await the next regularly scheduled meeting on January 10th. Nodding? Now, Mr. Sherman.
Thank you.
And thank you for understanding the process for getting there.
Yes. And this may be evident, but first of all, I'd like to state for the record that contrary to popular belief and the rumors around circulating around, I did not call this special meeting today. Secondly, I would like to say that I'm appalled at the willingness of board members and parents to insult our staff by saying we need to get back to educating students, as if that is not what they have been doing for the past nearly 2 years since the beginning of this pandemic. Shame on all of you who said that. Finally, I'd like to share with you the consequences of the board's uninformed vote on Monday. The board was uninformed because board members were provided incorrect information regarding the current status of 5 to 11-year-old vaccinations that was not corrected prior to or during the meeting even though it was known to be incorrect. Additionally, board members were not aware that a vote would be taken, and they may have been caught off guard at the abruptness of a vote when they were told that the goal was to work towards unanimous consent or move the item to the next agenda. Tonight, the board has the opportunity to correct those mistakes by reviewing accurate information and being fully informed of a formal vote. Thankfully, that is not all the board can correct. The board has the opportunity to realize the error of removing masks prior to administration having a plan for how that change affects other protocols, including quarantine and contact tracing, being ready to notify families of the changes, notification to staff how changes affect them, and the following important areas. Number one, Sue Powers did not confirm that she believes all families of 5 to 11-year-olds have in fact had the opportunity to begin the vaccination process, as all appointments for the last clinic were fully booked. Do we have confirmation from DCMC that their pediatric clinics this week, held on December 14th and today, December 15th, were fully booked or not? Do they both officially confirm that all families of 5 to 11-year-olds have had the opportunity to begin the vaccination process? If the answer to these questions is no, then the board has not followed through on their continuous statement these last 4 months that masks would not become optional until all families of 5 to 11-year-olds not only had the opportunity to start the vaccination process, but also complete the 5-week series. If public health and DCMC both confirm that all families have had the opportunity to begin vaccinations with their recent clinics, the earliest date these children would be considered fully vaccinated is January 20th, 2022. A vote for removing masks at a date prior to having confirmation from both public health and DCMC that they are confident all families have had the opportunity, given limited appointments available thus far, and 5 weeks following the last clinic date those vaccines were administered, goes completely against the board's previous statements to allow families that opportunity. Number two, the decision to move to universal masking at the start of the school year for all students, not just K-6, was based on virus activity and recommendations from our medical advisor, Dr. Fogarty, DCMC, Door County Public Health, and other experts such as the CDC and American Academy of Pediatrics. Since late August, the virus activity has grown so much that DCMC's chief medical officer, Dr. Heist, gave a podcast interview with Miles Danhausen Jr. at the Peninsula Pulse last Friday and shared a lot of information about hospital capacity and the impact on that capacity by COVID patients. He stated regionally and locally, there is a surge in COVID patients and that the whole state is in a crisis right now. And it's been that way for a month. Some will be lucky to be okay and some will not. There is no way to know who will be the lucky ones. I said, quote, "It's not a lie. When you work in the field, I'm here to tell you it's factual," end quote. And he continues to encourage everyone to wear masks indoors regardless of vaccination status. His concerns echo those of Sue Powers, who told us that the highest group of cases during the past month has been those who are 18 years old and younger. CDC guidance recommends layering multiple prevention strategies, especially in areas with moderate to high community transmission, low vaccination rates, and for people who are not fully vaccinated. Powers has confirmed that Door County currently has high community transmission and low vaccination rates. She also says that masking is a basic layer of prevention. On Tuesday, during a county board meeting, Ms. Powers was asked about virus activity in schools. She said that Gibraltar has significantly less cases than any county district, and the only difference is that Gibraltar is masking. What more proof do you need that masks are working as the basic defense to keeping children protected and able to remain learning in school? How about the information sent to the board today by a Gibraltar alumni and pediatric clinical pharmacist at Children's Hospital in Madison, who has seen firsthand the impact of COVID disease in children, as well as co-authoring the institution's guidelines and treatment of COVID-19 and MSI-C. I also shared with the board peer-reviewed studies and reports. These are studies and reports being used by the medical and scientific community as resources, not public opinion or shares on social media. Is this board or community more knowledgeable on this virus, its impacts on children, and both the need to and effectiveness of masking than someone working in the medical field 16 hours a day caring for children who have COVID? What about Dr. Fogarty and Dr. Heiss, who themselves and their colleagues are receiving the latest information and have direct local knowledge of the current virus activity levels and impact within our community. Is this board included in the local and statewide information and updates that Ms. Powers receives as part of the Public Health Department? A vote to remove masks at this time is a clear and direct statement to actual experts that you believe you know more than they do, despite it being their profession and you being a school board member trying to find credible information to base decisions on. Three, the decision to remove masks by the majority of this board has empowered bullying. On Tuesday, people who have bullied the board and others in the community were empowered to continue and worsen their bullying tactics. Some even cited the board's decision, and one said, I quote, "The school board voted masks are useless," end quote. The consequences of caving into loud voices instead of standing firm to the indicators set at the beginning of this year sets a dangerous precedent. If a child wants candy for breakfast, you say no and they throw a fit. Do you give in and let them have candy? No, you teach them why it's important to have a healthy breakfast instead of candy. Giving into this behavior only reinforces the bad behavior and sets an example for our students that they don't need to follow or accept the rules, and that if they scream loud enough, someone will give in. What happens when these students leave school having learned this behavior? Do the businesses where these community members work allow them to dictate pandemic protocols, or do they have to follow the rules? There are many businesses and organizations requiring masks at this time. Of course, we can't control the risks families choose to take outside of this building, but we can control the risks they bring into this building by the simple and basic prevention act of masking. We have been proactive throughout this entire pandemic. We cannot give up or give in now because of COVID fatigue. If you vote in favor of removing masks at this time, you are saying the following. One, I do not stand by my previous statements to allow sufficient time for children ages 5 to 11 years old to complete their COVID vaccination series. Two, I believe I know more about COVID than local, state, and national health experts, including Dr. Fogarty, Dr. Heiss, and Sue Powers. And three, I am okay allowing others to make decisions for the school district despite the consequences of those decisions on my and local parentis responsibilities to this school. I cannot tell you how to vote. All I can do is share with you the fact-based reasons why I will not be voting to remove universal masking at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Sherman. Board members, do you have any other information, any other discussion that is relevant to this reconsideration?
I would ask if the board or Mrs. Van Meer has received confirmation from Public Health and DCMC that they both confirm they have, in fact, given all families of 5 to 11 year olds the opportunity to complete their vaccination schedule prior to or on January 3rd.
The answer to that would be no, but let me go through what I have. Briefly, as everyone knows, the CDC formally approved the vaccinations on November 2nd. At that time, then Door County Medical and the Door County Health Department started hosting clinics just for children ages 5 to 11. Some of their first clinics were November 10th and 12th, as well as December 1st and 3rd. Those clinics were in Sturgeon Bay, and if you follow the timeline, what that would mean is if families were able to get vaccinated at those times, they would be considered fully vaccinated on December 15th if they received their first shot November 10th. If they received their first shot December 1st, they would be fully vaccinated January 5th. I went on to do some more investigation on children's vaccination clinics, specifically up in Fish Creek, as well as Sister Bay. Sister Bay provided clinics on December 8th, December 16th, and they will have one on December 29th. If a student or child received their first vaccination on December 8th, they would have their second dose, the 16th, and be considered, their second dose the 29th, and be considered fully vaccinated January 12th. And that's for the Sister Bay vaccination clinics. And we also have vaccination clinics through Door County Medical Center, which have taken place at the Fish Creek location. on December 14th and December 16th. And given the same protocols for full vaccination, children would be considered fully vaccinated on January 18th. I will say too, from Mrs. Powers, if we go back to the formal approval of vaccinations for children 5 to 11, which happened on November 2nd, Door County Public Health, as well as the Medical Center, started providing vaccines the following week, with second doses administered 3 weeks after the first. The child would then be considered fully vaccinated 2 weeks after that second dose. So the soonest timeline would be considered, or a child would be considered fully vaccinated, would be the week of December 12th. And I think that was the information that was discussed at the board meeting. So you have the very first clinics that were in Sturgeon Bay, and then you've had subsequent clinics recently up in Fish Creek, as well as Sister Bay. I think I've given those appropriate dates for you.
Thank you.
I don't know if the board has any other questions on that.
So Susan, January 18th would be the last date then?
The latest would be January 18th for any child that was vaccinated on the 14th of December.
Thank you.
What about those children that were vaccinated today on the 16th at the clinic today?
I mean,
so that would be January 20th. That would be the January 20th date, 2 days later. So January 20th, if they've been vaccinated today with their first dose of the clinic.
I don't know if you would like me to speak, but you don't want me to say so. I think
the board wants as much information as is pertinent to this reconsideration as we can hear.
Okay, so spoke back to the board in September, and I talked to you about the recommendation for universal masking on August 23rd. I talked to the board about that possibility. And back in August, the board said, you know, we would really like to wait until all students K-12 are eligible for vaccination and have the appropriate time to become fully vaccinated. That's what I have in my notes. At that time, though, we really only had ideas of what might happen. We needed CDC to formally approve. We needed clinics to be announced. So we thought we would wait until later, until that became available. And then that information subsequently became available, but it was limited information. And I think that's important for the board to know. When we discussed it, we were really talking about the clinics in Sturgeon Bay on November 10th and 12th. And if you remember, I talked to Mrs. Powers, and she said that I offered to host Gibraltar as a vaccination site. They weren't going to do schools as vaccination sites. And she said there weren't any scheduled up here yet, but that they would be working on it. And since that time, they've had vaccination clinics in Sister Bay as well as Fish Creek now, very recent. Remember, this whole thing started November 2nd. We started talking about this formally, and we haven't been that far along. I think we provided as much information as we could, given what we knew. These clinics from the Sturgeon Bay area, December 8th, 16th, that's fairly recent, and December 14th and 16th is fairly recent. I guess my question to the board would be, my understanding was we were waiting for there to be approval, which we have. We were waiting for there to be appropriate time. And when I thought of that as what the board was asking for, appropriate time to me was, what is the timeline for full vaccination? And so I went through that timeline with the board. And if you remember in our other conversations before we knew about these clinics, we had even talked about moving to optional masking at the end of the semester. So there's been a lot of conversation. The clarity that I would like from the board is, were we just talking about the timeline for full vaccination, given the time when it was first eligible, when kids were first eligible, or were we talking about, let's see when all the clinics take place And when will we know for sure that every child and family have had the ability to be fully vaccinated? Because I think that's where clarity needs to happen. I don't know for the board if that's what you're looking for and you didn't have that, or if you were just basically saying, hey, we want the timeline on how long it's going to take. This is the first day of the first clinic that was available in Sturgeon Bay, and we consider that our timeline forward. So that's just the points I wanted to make and hoping that there could be some clarity on that.
Board members, any comments about what you've been told, or is there any other clarification you would give for our better understanding of this reconsideration?
I appreciate that information, and I will say I have pages of notes and things that I would like to say, but points of brevity, I will say this in response to what you said, Angela, that we all discussed and made an agreement that the point of waiting to take the masks off for the littles, for the 5 to 11-year-olds, was until they were fully vaccinated. The information that I was operating on Monday was that date was the 17th. Now, I am willing to allow for this time for the younger students. I still think that the older students have had ample time to be vaccinated. I think it's okay to step our levels down. I'm still in favor of that. But the question that I have is, when do we begin this timeline that you're talking about? Because like I said on Monday, we have families who are going to want to vaccinate their children every clinic that comes up for a year potentially. So when do we say that the people who were standing in line,
this is board, I'm sorry to interrupt, is your speaker on?
They're having trouble hearing you in the back.
I can turn her up. Thank you.
Oh, that's better. Thank you. Sorry, I shouldn't lean back in my chair. The question that I was coming to was that I am, as personally as a board member, I'm willing to push that date back from January 3rd to achieve the full vaccination status for these younger students. That's appropriate. That's what, if you had asked me a month ago, or if anybody I've talked to in the community asked me a month ago where I stood, I said I think it's appropriate to unmask the older students, and I think that we need to wait until the vaccination status for the younger students has been complete. Now, if that date is later, I'm okay adjusting it. However, we need to decide and discuss as a board. We have four dates on the table that I'm counting, at least.
Yeah.
When do we say, okay, the people who wanted to get a vaccine for their children couldn't get it at the first clinic, couldn't get it at the second clinic, but, or do we say, well, they just couldn't find the time and get there? I mean, that's going to be the story for a long time. So that's my only holdup. And maybe at this point it's mincing hairs, I don't know, or splitting hairs, I'm mixing my metaphors, but that's what I think we need to discuss and decide.
To what you've just said, Mrs. Ward, the issue of the reconsideration does not consider changing the dates. Our purpose this afternoon is to affirm the motion or defeat the motion through the reconsideration. If you have different dates, the board will take those up on January 10th. It is not under the posting or the purview of this reconsideration to change the dates within the motion.
Then the conundrum is the January 3rd date is going to come and go prior to our next meeting. So if we reconfirm the original motion.
Thank you for putting that at the end, but at the beginning of your statement. Yes, a confirmation of the motion is to say that on January 3rd, an option for parents to unmask children in K-6 can take place. The board would then reconsider dates on the 10th if they wish to reconsider masking. But for our purpose this afternoon, we're not here to change the dates.
I would say to you, Lauren, in regards to your question about what do we use? When do we say everyone's had time? And while I would personally like to see us actually have DCMC or public health say to us, we feel we can confirm because they're giving the vaccines, right? They know what the demand is for those vaccines and what the availability is. If the board doesn't want to do that, I think that at the very least, it would be appropriate to say the December 16th date of today because then we have allowed the clinics in Fish Creek and Sister Bay, which were more easily accessible to our families, especially those who weren't able to get first appointment, becomes the appropriate dates to use to determine that 5-week series.
I hear that, Mrs. Sherman, but that says that we wait, this window is on convenience, that we hold the masking on the convenience of folk as they want to avail themselves of vaccination. I know of families that is on the first date possible. They trucked downhill to Sturgeon Bay, to Green Bay, to any places where they get it. I know of families that said that I'm that urgent, that I'm not waiting for the convenience of the most local vaccination center or clinic. I can't wait. That is urgency. That is addressing the matter. I hope that the board would not be, if we get to this on January 10th, considering when the last person says it's convenient to me. If that's the case, then we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
I agree with you, Dr. Seifer. I'm not looking to say we should extend this out for the next year so that everyone can decide a month from now that they want the vaccination. But I do know there was limited supply of the vaccine per conversation I had with Dr. Fogarty. So there wasn't available, there wasn't as much availability as they would have liked to have for families to make those appointments. I know families who called when it was publicized that the clinics were available, and by then they were already booked and they couldn't get into those first clinics. And they had to wait to the December clinics because all the November dates were full. And yes, you may say it's a convenience, but it's some families cannot drive down to Green Bay to do that. And I don't think it's fair to penalize them for not having been able to get right in December, having been told there were clinics going to be coming up here in December and taking advantage of those clinics.
Thank you. For our consideration, please know that the author of the motion was not last Monday night speaking to the efficacy of masks. The author will wear a mask personally. Oh, that's me. The author will wear a mask for a long time for personal health reasons. My option. The motion had to do with at what point does an educational institution, the school, move from its oversight of masking for all that we properly and I think correctly undertook at the beginning of the pandemic. But as we've made progressions in our school protocols, masking in particular, across the timeline of this pandemic, the question became of when does the school not become the arbiter of masking, but we move it to parents. I would wait for public health, certainly, Mrs. Sherman. I wish that they would, because statutorily, we're education and they are public health. They should be putting out the mandate. They should be telling us when it should be and when it doesn't have to be. I await that. But it'll be a long day in heck, I think, before we get that from our current public health, and not pointing to the locals, I'm pointing statewide. I don't believe that a school necessarily then has to be the arbiter of public health. Hence the motion that it's time in my purview, as I thought about making such, that we begin a timeline of moving it from the school's decision-making about who should be masked when to a parent option of when their children should be masked, as it also pertains to the community. A walk around any of our streets or storefronts, you can observe the prevalence of masking and see children, some masked, some unmasked. Board members, is there anything else that you would wish to have the board know in the reconsideration of the motion that was approved last Monday evening? I'm going to look and confirm that. Is there anything?
Well, I mean, I have things to say that reinforce my
vote on Monday. I don't know that it needs to be said again, but it's, I think I'm good.
Thank you, Mr. Pierre. My travels over the past week only confirmed what I had voted on last month. Thank you. Speak to your microphone, please.
No. My travels over the past week have only confirmed the reasons for my vote over the past, at the last board meeting. I've been through Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana in the last week. And Pennsylvania and Ohio, or New York, are really interesting cases. New York has virtually had a mask mandate throughout. And when we went into New York, I'd say it was about a 90% compliance with it. Pennsylvania, virtually no masks anywhere. The outbreak profiles in both cases were very, very similar through those two states when I looked at their data. So I'm not so sure that the masking in public places is a big deal. The other thing I would say to Angela's point about the outbreaks at other schools, I'm not aware that any other schools installed an ionization system to prevent infection in the schools. So that could be one of the reasons ours is lower as compared to the other schools.
Thank you, Mr. Pierre. Mrs. Carrier.
I don't really have anything to add to what I already said on Monday, so.
Well.
Yes, I obviously was one of the six that voted in favor of the motion on Monday. And to be honest, I was not 100% comfortable with it, but I agree with it. But I would feel more comfortable personally if that deadline was extended back a little bit. I know we're not here tonight to discuss actual dates on that. But I think if, in order to give those families an opportunity to get vaccination, I would feel more comfortable with that. That being said, I don't want it to be open-ended. But I think, you know, I believe Mrs. Van Meer mentioned the date of January 18th. I would be comfortable with that date being on the.
It's the 20th is today's clinic, just so you are aware. That was Tuesday's.
Okay, I'm sorry. January 20th then. So
thank you, Mr. Howell. And I do know that you know that this evening we're not changing dates.
No, I do know that, but I.
Mrs. Sherman.
I would have to say I agree with that. I'm not looking for this to be an open-ended thing. And again, I'm not looking for this to be extended a year out while everyone weighs their options and decides a month from now, 6 months from now, or a year from now to get their 5 to 11-year-olds vaccinated. I'm simply asking that this board stands to their word of their previous statements for the last 4 months that allow sufficient time for all children ages 5 to 11 to complete their COVID vaccination series. I believe that it is something that whether public health and Door County Medical Center give us an affirmative confirmation that yes, their clinics are no longer full. They have open appointments, which would to me be the indicator that everyone who wanted to get in that initial rush has gotten them and that they're still available. And it is becoming a convenience, right? I'm choosing whether this works for me versus I can't get an appointment because they're all booked up and I'm trying. And I think that that is something that at the January 10th meeting, we could either have confirmation on. If we cannot get that confirmation or get confirmation that that's not the case, that they are all booked up and they still don't feel like they've gotten to everybody and they have more set up or whatever that is. But I think there are ways that there is a possibility of using these December 16th date of the clinic from today as being the last clinic offered up here for an end of January around the 20th date. I think that's possible and I think it's reasonable.
I as a follow-up to that, you said that we had committed to all students who want to be vaccinated having their full term be seen through. And to that I say again, to the ones who want to get it initially. And I struggle with these multiple dates. I agree with Dr. Seifer that it's challenging when the Department of Public Health cannot give us firm dates. I go into these clinics for my own research and there are multiple appointments open. Now I'm not arguing with you, but I'm hearing one thing and I'm seeing another and it's difficult to relegate those two things together. So again, I say, we're not here to talk about dates. That's not the point of this, but I have a difficult time knowing that that the timelines that I've seen, that people have had the ability to vaccinate their children, that the time has gone. Yes, there are still people who are going to continue to do it, but that cutoff date, I think it's very difficult to make one. And can I also just say one thing about the third thing that you talked about, Mrs. Sherman, was about the nature of discussion about this in our community. And I do want to address that point. And I'm just going to read something that I think matters, because how this night finishes and how everybody in this community treats one another in the next months is going to be very important. So I just want to read this quickly. As far as personal attacks go, the insults in the mail that we receive in open school board sessions and on social media, I have only this to say: our children are watching us. Decency, empathy, and kindness have been lost in a typhoon of emotions about this issue. People have good intentions, but that only lasts as long as you maintain a sense of control and respect for your fellow citizens and elected officials. Leave our teachers, staff, and faculty out of the personal attacks. They have worked tirelessly to help our children learn despite the enormous weight of this pandemic and the measures we have asked them to uphold, not even to mention the personal issues they are dealing with in their own families. If you have something negative to say, keep it to yourself. The moment we turn against each other and make these issues personal, we have lost sight of purpose and you have lost your argument. Furthermore, anybody who suggests that I have been bullied into making this decision or that I have bullied anybody on this board obviously does not know me and does not know the high caliber of people that I share this seat with. We have been making difficult decisions for months. This is no different. Additionally, to say that this is a political decision is ill-informed. I am not up for re-election this year. I'm not pandering to my would-be voters. If you want to vote me out, you'll have a chance in April 2023 or stage a recall. And if the intention is to mean that it's indicative of national political leanings, I say you don't know this board very well. And finally, I'll say again, our children are watching us. They will watch how we treat and talk to each other about those who remove their masks and those who choose to keep them on and their families. They listen intently on the car rides home to the discussions you have with your friends around the dinner table and on your posts on social media. Practice rigorous kindness and empathy for other people's decisions and let that filter down and be a model for our children.
Thank you, Mrs. Ward. In the same vein, Mrs. Sherman, I asked you a question. You read into the minutes and into our recordings of this session some characterizations of board members that you make about them should they not agree with you. Do you stand by those characterizations, or would you want to rescind those?
I believe if you stand with the date of January 3rd for K through 6, you do not stand by your previous statements to allow sufficient time for children ages 5 to 11 years old to complete their COVID vaccination series. I do believe that. And I do believe that disregarding our local officials as they are telling us that we are in a very high activity virus level and telling us to everybody, not just schools, everybody to wear masks indoors, by ignoring that information, you believe that you know more than they do who are dealing with this. And I do believe we have an in loco parentis responsibility to this school, and that any allowance of public opinion and social media and all of those things that have gone into the things that we have been provided prior to these meetings, any use of those in these decision makings and not using the facts and the information that we have available is considered okay. And I don't believe that it is okay.
And I know that you recognize, pardon me for interrupting.
No, I'm done.
I know that you recognize that over the course of the pandemic, the board has voted on issues, reconsidered issues, not in a special meeting. Reconsider, change votes, and the direction of the board and its direction to the administration has changed over time from being a completely closed campus to reintroducing children to in-person teaching and learning, and to the staging of that even with mixed votes of the board. And those votes change. Boards do change votes. As this is a posted meeting, and we have an agenda item, and our tradition is to allow public comment to the board on a posted agenda item, is there any person present who would wish to address the board on this reconsideration of the motion that was passed this past Monday evening?
Hi, my name is Brett Reitz. I think I know most of you. A couple of questions. I could come up here and be really angry, but that probably would not be too persuasive. It wouldn't be. I liked a couple of things that, because I disagree, doesn't make it a personal attack. Passion and personal are two different things, and negative comments to the issues are not a personal attack. And you mentioned it, I'm pointing to you, but not because I disagree with you. Next, Angela, your conclusions regarding other schools not having as high an infection rate, and we have masks. Do you know the numbers? How much more do we have? How much less infection do we have?
It is not my conclusion. That was a comment made by Sue Powers at a county board meeting.
Right. What I'm asking you is, do you know the basis for that conclusion?
It is not my conclusion, as Sue Powers. You would have to ask her for the details of that.
Okay. So you're proceeding. So you'd be proceeding at this meeting with the conclusion that you don't know how it was come to.
I'm restating the information that Sue Powers stated at a meeting of the county board.
And you're restating it in an argument to change something significant. And Mike, you mentioned the ionization system, which when I spoke last before this group, I pointed out that there are three things lay people can do to reduce the virus. Two of them are well settled. One is the density of population. That certainly leads to increased transmission. And the other one is air quality. And to the extent we know or don't know whether or not the other schools had ionization, whether we know their density, whether we know even the number of infections, we might have one less infection for all we know. That information on its face seems significant. Oh my gosh, we have masks, we have a lower infection rate, but we can't draw any conclusion of that which would be supportive of changing this policy. It would be speculative. Another question is in terms of vaccinations. I know people, I don't like when people argue this way. I knew a guy, there's my example, and I win the argument. But there are people who were against vaccinations, thought they'd never get them, and then they decided to get them. There are other people who were for vaccinations, and then they did some research and decided against it. And obviously, there will not be a deadline where if you don't get vaccinated by this date, you won't be able to avail yourself of a vaccination. So even if you move this deadline back, you have the very real risk that someone will be inconvenienced to the point that they will have a child who has the first vaccination, but not the second, and then therefore is considered unvaccinated. So it is, and I think Lauren, you pointed this out, it's sort of a never-ending thing. You could always be in this circumstance where there are a family or two that are unvaccinated, want to get vaccinated, or not fully vaccinated, and the deadline or the masklessness of the school occurs before they've got their second vaccination. I would point you out, the CDC considers you vaccinated only after a time period after your second shot, which, by the way, there are endless articles that say they do that because if you die or get a heart condition or paralysis after the first shot, you don't have to get submitted into the VAERS data as an adverse effect of the vaccination. The other thing that's important to note is we're dealing with the least vulnerable population of all. In statistical terms, children have a 0% chance of dying from this unless they have comorbidities. I think it's one or two children in the whole state of Wisconsin that conceivably have passed with COVID that don't have, you know, openly obvious or known comorbidities. Kids are not at risk from this disease. More of them die from the flu. More of them die from drowning in swimming pools. Once again, I said it last week, that it's a shame that we're sacrificing our children's freedom. We're making them wear masks, causing anxiety, causing mental health, causing addiction, suicide, diminishing their learning experience because they might get sick, probably won't be fatal, highly probability it won't be fatal, but they might get an adult sick. 83% of academics in the academic community have no comorbidities. That means 83 out of 100 teachers really are at low, low risk of infection. The big kickers in terms of comorbidities that cause it are diabetes, age, and obesity. And diabetes is now being questioned because many diabetics are obese. Kids are not, they're fine. They'll do fine. There were risks in your decision. I understand that. I understand that there are concerns. And Angela, you make some good concerns. I understand your passion. But it's always going to be there. There's always going to be a family or two. Let me ask you this question. Do we know how many families want the vaccine that had this test and they're going to get it, but it'll be just a couple of days after the masks come off? Do we know that number, who that is? Or are we only reconsidering this motion? Are you only reconsidering this motion based on possibilities? And that's not appropriate. There was ample discussion last week, and you did the right thing. You did the right thing. I understand why you made the original decision to mask up and shut down. I understand that. There was a very, very politicized, manufactured panic in our world. We didn't know. And you took absolutely appropriate steps. It said last week, I disagree with them. However, I can't say you were wrong under the circumstances. But at this point in time, with what we know now, let me go sideways for a bit.
Don't go too sideways, please, Mr. Reese.
Yeah, we've met the time limit.
I said that.
Who's I?
I. Oh, I
can't even understand you.
Thank you. Don't go too sideways with us.
Is that a joke or is
no,
that a...
No, not at all. But this is an opportunity for you to talk to the board rather than lecture the public.
I've just received a lecture from Lauren on parenting. You guys work for me. I'm going to talk.
Dr. Seifer, I'm going to call Board Policy 0167.3, which states each person looking to address the board has a limit to 2 minutes. We've exceeded our 2 minutes.
Two sentences.
Two.
You did the right thing last Monday.
Thank you.
You weren't bullied, and it was an appropriate decision. Please stand by it. Second sentence was a run.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. Thank you very much.
Dr. Seifer, as I believe that got close to, if not extended, the 5 minutes that are limited under Board Policy 0167.3, I make a motion to waive the limit of 5 minutes of public comment.
I will second that. We have a motion and a second to waive our rules regarding public comment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Mrs. Sherman.
But I will say I did not waive all rules. I still wish to make sure that we are following our limits of 2 minutes per person, or approximately. I won't hold a timer, but.
I heard your word approximately. Thank you. Yes, ma'am, please give us a name.
Hello, good night, everyone. I'm Georgina Saunderson Hatch. I have two children at Gibraltar, Phoenix Hatch and CJ Hatch. So I would like for us to reconsider the decision that was made at the last board meeting. Some of you may know my daughter, Phoenix. She has a tracheotomy. A tracheotomy, in layman's terms, is an open airway, is an open artificial airway. It allows my daughter to breathe. For a lot of persons in the normal world, you never have to worry about influenza, RSV, or a simple thing called the cold. Over the last 2 years, Phoenix has been sick once with just the cold, that turned into pneumonia, that turned into her being transported to Children's Hospital of Milwaukee. Prior to COVID, prior to this pandemic, it was baseline that Phoenix would always have a cold, a sniffle, a runny nose, something. Give me a second. In the winter, she would usually catch just about any respiratory infection going around school. What the difference has been is, of course, we had a break from school. She was in virtual learning, her and her brother. And then at some point we return to school and we return to school with masks. Upon reentering school, Phoenix was sick probably the first week. And then after that, there's been no colds, no sniffles, no nothing up to this day. I think the biggest change has been that there were masks. There were distances. There were protocols put in place that prevented my daughter from catching just about everything that was going around Gibraltar. I know in the past, we've kind of looked at our special needs community, our special needs children, as second class to everybody else. I'm tired of that. It would be nice, it would be so nice to know that the people with our complex children don't have to be told, then, I quote, keep your children at home. It would be so nice. My daughter is social. If she had to sit in a little plexiglass and be able to see her friends and say hi by only seeing their eyes, she will be very, very happy. I am so happy that a lot of you have never seen your kids on a ventilator. I am so happy that a lot of you have never had to take all of these precautions for 8 years in a normal lifespan. Every winter we take all these precautions. I am happy you've never had to do that. So, for the small part of our community that are complex care and need a little extra loving and a little extra accessory to make it through, can we please reconsider putting our masks back up until we come to some conclusion as to when you decide is a last date for just about everybody that can get and want to be vaccinated? For example, I did call the very first week it was available. My daughter cannot go through a drive-through or to a pharmacy. We had to wait patiently until she could be seen in a doctor's office for her vaccination. That was today, first dose. So can you be reasonable about this, please? Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you for speaking to the board.
Hello, I'm Brita Nelson. I would completely agree with what Georgina Hatch has said. And I would ask the board to reconsider waiting after the holidays. It doesn't make sense to me to unmask right before the holidays, potentially exposing these kids and their families and our community when the hospital is literally filling up. And all across the state, that is the case. Giving parents this kind of stress right now, when we're all looking at these numbers. For some families, they don't have a choice of what to do to keep their families safe. And given no options, if masks are coming off optionally in the school, if their child can't be around unmasked people during a pandemic, they have no choice but to pull them from Gibraltar. And I would ask you to consider offering an actual optional virtual situation as opposed to conditional. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking with the board.
I'll keep this very brief. My name is Matt Francis Coney. I don't have a child in the school district. I'm just a concerned taxpayer. In early November 2021, the CDC released a report titled Epidemiology of COVID-19 in Children Age 5 to 11. In this report, they stated that over 1.9 million children have had COVID-19. Exactly 94 have died. That includes those with comorbidities. That means the death rate for children 5 to 11 is roughly 0.005%. That is significantly less than the death rate for the common flu for the same age group. That means, scientifically, a vote to continue the mask mandate makes more sense to protect our kids from the common flu than to protect our kids from COVID.
Thank you for speaking with the board. Ms. Van Meer, are there any chats?
You have one participant who wishes to speak with their hand raised.
Yes, Monica.
Hi, are you able to hear me and see me? Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you all. I'll try to be brief. I have certainly a lot to say as I have a lot of experience with the topic. My name is Monica Bogenjuice. I was the alum that was cited in this meeting. I am a pediatric clinical pharmacist at American Family Children's Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin, and I've seen firsthand the impact of COVID-19 disease and its aftermath in children. Just a couple of comments that were made regarding how it doesn't impact kids as much or they're not as sick. A couple aftermaths of things that we've seen, which we've never seen in diseases before, we have increased rates of diabetes, we have increased rates of neurological conditions as a result of transmission and infection with COVID-19. We've also have a new condition called MISC, which is a inflammatory system, which has caused several patients that I have taken care of be into the ICU needing aggressive treatment to maintain blood pressures and heart rates. And yes, I agree, it is a very low rate, but I do ask the question to you all, is one kid's life worth it? Is one kid's life worth it? Is it your kid? Is it your neighbor's kid? Is it worth it to not allow the opportunity for families to get their children vaccinated to be able to protect themselves in the community? The other comment I make, I commend whomever it was that has the complex care needs kids. I see these patients frequently, and it is an incredible community to take care of those patients because they are all incredibly complex. The other comment to make about that is you're absolutely right. We have not seen those children in the hospital due to masking. Our frequent flyers, as we call them, that are in for frequent pneumonias and respiratory viruses, we don't see them anymore. And it's as a result of masking and good hand hygiene and protection. Our cases, and you can find this information available in the Wisconsin Health Department. Last year, RSV, which is a condition that attacks the most vulnerable infants, premature babies, and the elderly, which often causes severe illness and death, we had almost zero activity level in the past year. Now the activity level has started to raise again as a result of unmasking in areas. However, still not as significant as we've seen in the past. And so I guess here I urge you to consider as what has been shared, to really continue to push back that date. I know that's not up for the discussion for today, but at future meetings, to just ensure all children are able to receive vaccines that are eligible to prevent transmission to elderly populations or other vulnerable populations that may not have that opportunity. So thank you all. I appreciate it.
Speaking with the board. Is there any other person who wishes to address the board on the topic at hand?
Dr. Seifer, I do need
some. We have a person.
Oh, the battery died, drats. We're not asking for people to be unmasked. We're asking for the opportunity to make that decision. And there's been a lot of talk about dates and availability of clinics and other sorts of things. And I was remembering back to the last meeting, and I think your missing board member actually spoke to that. Are you able to get at your minutes, your preliminary minutes from that meeting? He was asked when the opportunities were there and were not taken up. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but it sounded to me like they've had the opportunity at the Door County Memorial Hospital to be vaccinated and there's openings. And that was at the last meeting. So maybe that'll be helpful in the way you think about this. I'd like to see our kids' smiles. I'd like to see our teachers' smiles. I'd like the kids to be able to see our teachers, because I think that is really impeding our ability to educate them. It's not a hit on anybody, but human communication is not just your voice. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking with the board.
I am looking for clarification on the motion that was in regard to parent permission. Did you mean parent permission or did you mean parent choice? And the reason I say that is parent permission, in order for us to implement that, would be something similar to parent permission slips that we would need to take. And then we would need to monitor who had permission and who didn't. And I think that's a very daunting task for the school district to be able to do. So I'm assuming you meant parent choice, but I shouldn't make assumptions because those words will be pointed at me if I don't do parent permission slips.
Thank you for the question. Many things are going to be daunting, have been daunting, will continue to be daunting, and new daunts will arise. You know where I'm headed. The direction to the administration is specifically with parent guardian permission. Students in the respective grade band may be unmasked. The intention of the motion was to say that in many ways, as in other ways, that we have authorized the administration to implement directions. We are saying to the administration in this direction, we need to honor the parent who is providing permission and the parent who is not. So yes, I anticipate a daunting task, but it's doable, that you will ascertain what students are permitted, parent, guardian permitted to unmask, and what students are not. That is what was intended in the book. The choice is to a parent to give permission. And then we will honor that and supervise accordingly. Board members, please consider that perhaps in your reconsideration of the motion. The motion before the board for reconsideration, having heard all other information that we sought for this purpose this afternoon, is the reconsideration of direct the administration to continuing implementation of these protocols, school cleaning, personal hand washing, appropriate social distancing, federally required masking of all persons on school buses, and optional masking with parent guardian permission beginning December 20th for students and staff in grades 7-12 and January 3rd for students and staff in grades K-6. The motion on Monday night was made. It was seconded. It is up to the board this afternoon in reconsideration. At this point, board members, those in favor of the motion, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
The opposed?
Nay.
Did all board members vote?
I did not hear all votes, so I asked the board president to please call the vote.
Thank you. I did not hear them all. With a raise of hand, those voting aye, please raise your hand. Thank you. Those voting nay, please raise your hand. The motion is confirmed. The direction to the school district is to implement the motion that has been approved and now confirmed. This does not mean, however, that on January 10th or any subsequent board meeting, that another motion or consideration of protocols cannot be undertaken. Tonight is only a matter of the reconsideration of that motion and hearing information and voting to support that motion as approved last Monday night. As has been alluded to, it is a never-ending story, and I anticipate there will be motions and discussions going forward. The second item of business this afternoon is to confirm district-provided remote education for students is conditional and not optional. The current status of remote education is that it is provided on the condition of an IEP or a 504 plan that is presented by a parent to the administration that has supported them through the development of an IEP and or a 504 plan. It is not currently an option that a parent may say, I'm choosing to go remote. My child wants you to do a studio classroom and have my child participate in at-home learning. The current condition is that all children are in person unless there is a conditional IEP or 504. Is there, what we, our process this afternoon will be to, after consideration of this, to vote to affirm that the current status of remote education is conditional and not optional. An affirmative vote would be to retain the two conditions of IEP and 504, a vote to rescind that direction, to say that no, it is no longer conditional, but now optional, would be to allow for any person to opt in or out, as the case may be, of direction and into remote education. Board members, questions, comments regarding this topic?
Well, the board just voted to uphold removing masks for K-6 students on January 3rd, knowing and hearing from multiple parents that their children will not be fully vaccinated by that date. And having gone against the recommendations of local health officials to keep masks on at this time, there are a lot of families who do not feel safe sending their children into the building with unmasked families, especially when some of those families have publicly stated that they don't care if disease spreads in our building, that they are not going to work to prevent it from spreading. Not all of them, but there have been families who have said that publicly. And I think we owe it to our families to allow these students to keep some connection to our district and not push them out and away completely because they are unable or their families are not at this time comfortable sending them in person with the decisions that have been made. So I think all students deserve the option to remote learn at this time.
All students to remote, or are you establishing a new condition? I thought I heard you creating a condition in the first sentences of your paragraph.
Families who don't feel comfortable having their students in person at this time and those who have not been able to complete their vaccination series, is that what you were referencing?
I'm asking you.
Oh. Those could be the conditions, that it's not just that I want to because I don't want to be here, but I think if families state their concern for having their children attend in person at this time, given the recent changes, or they want their children not to be in person until they've been able to complete their full vaccination schedule, those should be considered conditions to allow virtual learning.
Thank you, Mrs. Sherman. Other board members?
You started by saying that if we are all unmasking on January 3rd, that this should be conditional. We're not all unmasking on January 3rd. That's not what our vote was. I don't think that's the intention. I think there are many families who will continue to choose to mask their children as they see fit, and that's appropriate. I also think that there will continue to be unvaccinated students and staff in this building for days, weeks, months, years, and that this will always be a condition of life in the era of COVID, in this building and in every building. I am not saying that to be callous or unfeeling or unempathetic to the students who are concerned and the families who are concerned. Those students and families can keep their masks on, and they should if they have fear. I also say to you, if we are saying that they can remote learn until they are fully vaccinated, how far do we extend that? What if somebody decides that they don't want to vaccinate until July? Do we extend it until then?
I mean, you've given parents the option of masks, and you've said the decision-making goes back to the parents. So how do you say it only goes back to them regarding masks, but not the learning environment for their children?
There's a legal answer to that, and that's that we have decided as a school board that it is conditional based on a 504 or a doctor's note. And I think that can continue to go forward, even in cases that you're suggesting.
So parents have an option to choose to mask or not mask based on their comfort level, but families don't have an option. But those families who choose to be more precautious at this time don't get to make the choices. They either have to accept the unmask, those who choose to unmask, or they have to pull their kids out of school.
I hate to make it sound that stark, but that is the option in front of them.
I mean, that's
based on the policies that the school board has enacted thus far. Yes.
Well, it's a rule. It's another rule. It's a rule just like masking was a rule that can be changed just as masking was changed.
You're making your case.
Other board members, what are your thoughts?
I would ask us to consider the option of virtual learning if the family has intentions to have their child vaccinated, but again, with that cutoff date where we spoke of earlier, January 20th. That way it's not open-ended. It's not, does not give a family an opportunity to keep pushing it out. But I think it's a fair thing to do if they can't get in or to get vaccinated and they're not fully considered fully vaccinated to that date, that they have an option. That being said, I would like input from the faculty and staff on that, what the feasibility of that would be, the logistics of that. But I'd like input from all those involved before, you know, we proceed too far with this.
Don, are you saying, just to clarify, that you would be in support of a virtual learning option from essentially Monday until January 20th and then no more?
Yes, that's what I'm looking at. Again, based upon feedback or input from the teachers.
Mrs. Van Meer, how reasonable is that for the faculty to move back to a virtual option?
On Monday.
I would want them to have at least 2 days of planning time to do that. It's a quite significant shift. Right now, they might be doing virtual learning for one or two students in their classroom because of a 504, an IEP, or an extended health reason. But to, you know, switch it back to parent choice and not really know the numbers and how that's going to work in their classrooms, it's going to take time for them to plan for that.
No, I understand that. And I'm not trying to create a burden for them. I'm just trying to facilitate for those parents that choose to have the vaccination that won't be considered fully vaccinated until that date. Like I said, that's why I would appreciate the feedback and input from them.
I think that's a recipe for chaos in our classrooms and our staff. Everybody's tired, and that's just one more thing. I think the staff would have a real issue trying to get that together that fast, change gears.
Well, that's why I asked that we have their input from that. We're speculating at this point whether they would want favor of it or not doing it. So that was my point, that we get feedback from them.
Your window for feedback, Mr. Helm, may not be Monday, but as Mrs. Van Meer is indicating, no, it may be, as we have 3 days of school next week,
right,
that's gathered prior to the return to school on January 3rd or on that week of the January 3rd.
Understand, this is coming at the last minute like this, but I do want us to, do the due process on this. And it takes more than 3 days, and that takes more than 3 days, but I do think it's a discussion should be had.
And did I hear in your concept, there would be a sunset? I thought I heard January 20th.
Correct.
Thank you.
The next board meeting would be January 10th. So if the board made a choice to do that, then we're talking just days of. That what you were anticipating?
Well, no, actually, I was hoping that we could be implemented, obviously it doesn't seem like we'll be able to do it before Christmas break, but I was hoping that on resumption of January 3rd, that the policy that procedure could be implemented.
With tonight's agenda listed as it is there an opportunity to make a motion about this, or the wording of the agenda item simply says to confirm district provided remote education for students is conditional and not optional?
That's correct. And then to extend that, are there conditions?
So we're talking about creating a condition,
which is not an open option, but a condition. And I think Mr. Helm and Mrs. Sherman are beginning to speak about specified conditions, not open-ended. Am I hearing you correctly? So, Mrs. Ward, yes, the agenda item is to confirm that remote education is conditional, not optional. Upon that confirmation, should that be confirmed, then the board has conversation about what are the conditions. Mr. Carrier?
I guess I worry a little bit about opening up virtual learning again, whether it's conditional or optional, I guess, the way we have it is, you have a 504 or an IEP. How do you know that somebody is legitimately, I'm not saying people are going to lie, but how do you know somebody legitimately, hasn't gotten vaccinated yet and things like that? I guess I worry about people saying that, but that's not really the reason. You know what I'm saying? I guess that's my worry. And then also putting that burden on teachers, because I know I'm married to a former teacher. I know what a stressful situation it was doing virtual learning and in-person learning or just virtual learning. It's really difficult and it's not sustainable.
Thank you, Mrs. Carrier. We've been around the horn to talk about our perception of remote education based upon condition or option. I would add that we've experienced studio teaching. Studio teaching being that a classroom is fitted with cameras and screens, and children are fitted at home with remote devices and enough internet connectivity to make an effective education. That is a participation, not just a turn on in the morning, give attendance and turn off, but to be effective. We've experienced that as an emergency, a true emergency, when we were in a closed campus. We continued that process when we had students both at home and in person. And we closed that process at the end of last year, and we moved directly into in-person teaching and learning. Schooling is best when it's in-person teaching and learning. It is premised upon in-person teaching and learning. We've grown opportunities for technology that almost always are conditional. Very seldom is it a matter of just I choose to be a learner from home, or I choose to be a teacher from home. My belief is that it is conditional. Mrs. Van Meer, are there things you would wish the board to know about this question?
I would say to the board, if you choose to move forward with a choice of virtual learning, that we provide our teachers with 2 workdays in order to prepare for that. And given the time of the timing for the holiday season, I would suggest January 3rd and 4th.
Meaning, I'm sorry to clarify, you mean January 3rd and 4th being days where students are not in attendance, but teachers are in the building working to that end?
Correct.
So I heard that correctly. All children then would not be in attendance
on January 3rd and 4th, so that teachers could prepare their classrooms and their technology for optional virtual learning for a larger group of students and families.
But at this point, for an unknown body of students.
I don't know how else I can expect my teachers to be ready for that.
I'm thinking as a secondary teacher right now, and the days in January are golden as you approach the end of semester, and that does not sit well with me. I completely understand the need, but yeah.
I would ask what the district's response will be to any families if an additional condition is not added for a virtual learning option. What the district's position will be with families who keep their kids enrolled but do not send them to in-person learning, do not have a virtual option until the 20th of January when their kids may become fully vaccinated.
I believe by statute they have 10 days for absence, and then that would move into truancy. So we would have to file truancy papers and go through the truancy process.
Board members, any other comments before we open this to a public input? None? Would anybody like, any person present like to address the board on this issue?
Steve Trotter again. I think it might be helpful if you consider secondary versus primary, elementary school. It seems like you're doing both. And I don't think there's any question that people in 7th through the end of their graduation have had an opportunity to get vaccinated. So they would not need to have a virtual learning experience available to them in this environment.
Thank you.
My name is Heather Green. I was not expecting to speak tonight, but I would caution the board about moving forward with a remote option. Some of you may know what I do for a living. I'm a dental hygienist. I work in people's mouths closely for an hour or more at a time. When we shut down in March, our office was completely closed because we were non-essential. So from March until June 8th, I got to sit and stew and think, do I want to do this? It's kind of scary. Fear, it can be debilitating. We weren't able to get PPE like the clinics were. We weren't wearing KN95s or N95 masks. We shielded, we installed filtration systems in our office. We changed gowns, still do, between every patient. We did things that we had control of to the best that we could. Fast forward, no, go back. I almost left my profession because of fear. Came back, it was okay. And here we are. I'm treating patients. I don't ask my patients, are you vaccinated or not? I treat my patients ethically, everyone the same. Do not go to remote option because parents are afraid. It is scary. You should be afraid, but you will see it will be okay. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking with the board.
You have 2 hands up.
Please bring them in.
Okay. First, we have the Gilby family.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Awesome. Good evening, everyone. Bob Gilby, parent of a kindergarten student. I emailed all of you after the meeting on Monday night, requesting that virtual learning be discussed. With the onset of the Omicron variant, Pfizer, who have made the vaccine that all of our children are getting, have confirmed that two doses is not enough, and you need that booster shot to get the same effectiveness against Omicron as you did with the Delta variant. We all know, and no one is denying, that we all hate masks. No one wants to wear masks, but masks give us that protection. We're taking away the masks. We're saying parents have an option for masking. Well, let's face it, the parents who want the option for masking are not going to send their children with masks. That's the problem. As such, those of us who have been taking the pandemic seriously this whole time, as I'm sure all of you on the board know, this is the last option, is to reinstate a virtual option for those of us who do have children who are not yet able to get a booster shot. Or our babies at home. I have a 6-month-old baby at home. And those of you who are on the board last year will remember just how important that is for me and my family, considering what happened last year as a result of the hospitals being at capacity. For those of you who don't know, my wife and I lost a son. We also not only have our 6-month-old baby at home, but then we also have immunocompromised family members. Our son could come into Gibraltar with two shots, still contract the virus, and then take it home. We know how masks work. At this point, in December of 2021, almost 2 years into this pandemic, we know that you don't wear the mask to protect you. You wear the mask to protect the person next to you. That's how they work. We all know this. By removing that layer of safety, say, oh, you can send your kid with a mask and they'll be fine. No, that's not how it works. We know how masks work. You've given parents an option to mask, which is an option to not mask, which is an option to put my family at risk. You cannot then go ahead and say, we do not give you an option to keep your family as safe as possible. The infrastructure has already been put in place in the classrooms. It does work. Some may not like how it works. It's not an ideal situation, but it's the best we can do. And the fact of the matter is, if we delay this and we say no virtual option for those of us who have family members at home who are not able to be vaccinated or are at high risk even though they are vaccinated, then all you're doing is saying your family is not welcome at Gibraltar. And as a result, if virtual is not an option for my family, then my student will be pulled from Gibraltar. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking with the board, Mr. Gilby.
And Amy?
Is muted.
Amy, if you could unmute your mic, you can speak, Don. The board is listening.
May I reconsider speaking with the board? Let us move on. If we see her hand return,
yes,
please let us know. Is there anyone else present who would wish to speak with the board?
Rita Nelson again. Is this on?
Thank you for speaking with the board.
You have a hand up. I don't know who G-Mom is, so please identify yourself when you come over.
Unmute. Start video. Hello, can you hear me?
We hear you.
Okay, great. Yes, sir. This is G-Mom.
Who is G-Mom, please?
This is Carla Sigourick. I have a fourth grader and a kindergarten student at Gibraltar. I just want to say, you know, my background is largely healthcare, and I've been very proud of how Gibraltar has handled the situation and been so careful and concerned about the safety of our children, but also the surrounding community and families up until this point. In general, with the masking, unfortunately, you guys passed that where the masking is still optional. Deeply saddened by that. I just feel that you guys have not given it enough time for everybody to get the chance. Yes, I rushed. We were day one. We were concerned and such, but there are a lot of parents out there who are worried and concerned about the vaccine with their children and wanted to see a little bit of time how their children in the community were reacting to it and also in the world before they went ahead. Now they might be rushing, now they might be concerned, and now they feel cornered. And unfortunately, Gibraltar has cornered them. Again, I don't feel masking is a choice. It is something that we just have to do right now because there's COVID and we're going to. And as this virus continues to mutate, that is what is going to happen. I continue to mask. And I have my family mask because that's what we need to do. And we need to, the vaccine is not 100%. The child, even fully vaccinated, could still carry that on and bring that home. Yes, in general, children are at less risk. But again, I'm not willing to chance that and sacrifice that. We have babies at home. We have grandparents. We have teachers at school, even if it's just one that is not able to get vaccinated yet or immunocompromised. I'm not willing to risk that, and nobody else should. It's a mask. It's simple. It's something that we just have to do right now. I know everybody is extremely exhausted and tired and sick of discussing this, but hang on. Please, board, please, everybody, hang on and remain strong with yourselves. You can do this. And I appreciate you guys taking the time and doing this. It would be great if we could give other families choices and options. And I just, this is just very tough. And I hope you guys all can at least give families and people a little bit more choice in the matter and the concern and dig deep. And really listen to the science, because we're not the experts. Listen to the public health. Listen to the American Academy of Pediatrics. Listen to those people that are in healthcare. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking with the school board tonight. Any other hands? Last call.
My name is Sandy Friedenfels. I'm not prepared to speak tonight, but I just want to express my concern for optional virtual learning. I don't know if this is just for elementary that you're speaking of or the entire district, but if you can recall, the virtual learning was a nightmare. When it went to optional, that was a bigger nightmare, it was a nightmare for the students. Many did not participate. There's no way to know if they're participating. And I think the biggest nightmare was for the teachers, what you were about to put upon these teachers again for a short time period is unreasonable. And I think that's a high expectation for a teacher. They're already pushed to the brink. They're worn out. They're tired. You have to be reasonable with this. It's too short of a time frame to implement it and to carry it through. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking with the board. Board members, our agenda item this evening is to confirm district-provided remote education for students is conditional, not optional. At this point, we're going to vote on that question, realizing that if you want conditions, we have a continuing conversation under the umbrella of conditions. A vote at this point says it is conditional or it is optional. If we defeat the motion that it is conditional, the proposition that it is conditional, then it becomes optional, not conditional. Nodding, we understand.
I don't. Thank you. I understand the conditional versus optional. I thought before we said that we could add a condition to this.
Once we confirm that it is conditional, then let's discuss what another condition may be.
Thank you.
But we want to either have on the table that it is all optional, not conditional, or it is conditional. We have two conditions currently. What other conditions would the board wish to implement? First question. All those in favor of confirming district provided remote education for students is conditional and not optional, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. You opposed?
Nay.
I heard one nay.
I'm sorry, nay.
Aye,
sorry. I'm sorry, nay.
Nay?
Yeah.
With a show of hands, those who support the motion that it is conditional, not optional, raise your hand. We have 1, 2, 3, 4. Those who believe it is optional, please raise a hand. Thank you. We have supported that district provided remote education will remain conditional, not optional. What conditions beyond IEP and 504 would we ask the administration to implement? We've had suggestion that it be related to non-vaccinated children. We've had suggestion that it be timelined. We've had suggestion that there needs to be some evidence working towards vaccination, I thought I heard. What are our thoughts about additional conditions beyond IEP and 504?
I guess I did not make myself clear early when I spoke on this, but I was intending for this to be for the elementary level, not the secondary level. I know
well, do you mean K-6 because that is the grouping for masking?
I intended for that group that was not eligible to be vaccinated until November. I think the secondary school has had the ample time to become fully vaccinated. So this was just for those students who've not had the opportunity to become fully vaccinated by this January 3rd. Yep.
So you are proposing an implementation of remote education for K-6 children not yet vaccinated by January 3rd.
By January 20th.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. The
children who aren't vaccinated by the 3rd and sustain it until
the January.
He suggests the 20th.
Yes, with the cutoff date of January 20th.
other conversation. If you're making a motion.
I was clarifying my intent on this.
Do you wish to move that? Or are you waiting for other conversation to see where it sorts?
I'd like to hear the conversation, but I also would like to hear, and I know it's not feasible at this point, but I'd like to have input from the faculty and staff.
Mr. Helm, I heard you just say that it may not be feasible, but you'd like it.
I would like to have input from the faculty.
Prior to a vote on this or prior to implementation?
Prior to implementation.
I think the major question here, the big unknown, is how many families are we talking about?
Correct.
Because if we're talking about one student per classroom in the elementary, that's not the same as half a classroom. And the impact that it will have on our teachers and their classrooms and their aides will hinge on that. I personally can see the reasonability of offering this option to elementary students. Obviously, I didn't hear enough tonight to make me overturn my vote from Monday. But if there are students who are not reaching their full vaccination status until the 20th, even though I still think that there were opportunities at other vaccination sites, at pharmacies, at other locations, if we feel like this is appropriate, the January 20th, that it's a short amount of time for elementary K through six, I can get behind that.
I think it's an awful short period of time for a lot of turmoil. You're looking at 13 or 14 school days if we take two off the prep board.
I understand. And I recognize the strain that this is going to put on teachers. I recognize that everybody is exhausted. I'm also listening to our community members who feel that they have no option. And as long as there is an end point to this, I think it's reasonable.
Mr. Helm, if you're thinking about a January 3rd to January 20th, would you substitute backpack mail and lessons for virtual hookup so that children have an opportunity to remain in contact with their instruction without families having to go through the supervision of remote education at home, without their having to go through the short-term hookup of internet technologies that may not be present? The school does not have to supply it for a short term, and we don't have to reconfigure classrooms that currently do not have studios. Would you consider backpacking instruction so that children stay in tune, in contact with ongoing instruction for the period of time you're considering?
I would certainly consider it, and I'm not qualified to make that decision. I think that, again, would require input from the faculty and staff as to, again, the logistics of that and the effectiveness of that. I certainly think it's a viable option.
Your thought would be that the district provides ongoing instruction, which may be virtual, it may be provided in a variety of ways, not necessarily studio teaching.
Correct.
Thank you.
So really what you're talking about is an extended absence package for students, that we've done that in the past for students to get their homework or classwork and head for Florida.
So I did not take that incorrectly when you said considering this an extended absence package. No, it's an extended instruction for children who are planning to be absent from school.
Yeah.
And it would parallel children on vacation. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I'm not trying to create a burden on anyone. I'm just trying to give this option to these families who can't achieve that vaccination status until the 20th.
I gather that. And thank you. And I'm not trying to undo a burden. We have an obligation to continue instruction. I'm looking for different methodologies for continuing that instruction that could be more or less burdensome. Less is preferable, but continuing should be the given.
Well, again, I think that's an excellent suggestion, an excellent point to consider.
Mrs. Carrier, thoughts?
I hadn't considered that, but actually I think that would be a better option and less having to set more things up in the classroom and things like that. I mean, obviously it's still extra work for the teachers, and I'm with Don saying that I would like teacher input on it though, to see what they think about it. And Mrs. Van Meer, do you have any idea, like how many people have requested to have virtual learning? You don't have any idea?
It wasn't an option.
Oh, but I mean, like, did anybody request?
I've had a few people email me after the board's decision, but to have an official request, I don't have numbers on that.
Okay. I was just curious.
I would say it's a little disappointing to hear this conversation and the fact that this board puts so much into parent comfort over masking and yet will not consider parents' comfort with in-person learning.
Can you clarify that?
Well, the decision to take masks off is that parents can choose what their comfort level is, whether their children mask or don't mask. But we're not allowing parents to choose their comfort level of their students learning in person or remotely based on the changes of taking masks off, A, when not all 5 through 11-year-olds have had the opportunity to complete vaccination schedules, in addition to the recommendations of the experts saying do not take masks off right now, especially before the holidays. I mean, even Southern Door is masking for 2 weeks after winter break. Because they understand that is likely to be a time we will see virus activity. We are seeing it, it's the evident now after Thanksgiving. We're not taking those things into account, what's going to happen, removing masks and the breakouts that we will likely see within our building. And parents may not be comfortable with that. The parents who are comfortable taking masks off are being given that opportunity. The parents that are not comfortable with the situation that's been created by these recent decisions are not giving an opportunity to have a learning choice that's comfortable and fits their family's precautions, but those who choose not to mask are being given that opportunity.
I heard you out, Mr. Sherman, but I need to correct you that it is not a parent's option to choose at-home learning. It is not an option. The state statute does not support that as an option. It does support it as a condition. We have no standards right now which say, I choose to have my child at my volition to become an at-home learner, unless the parent chooses homeschooling. And that is where the parent choice by statute, by legislation sits. All other mandates are for in-person teaching and learning, except as exceptionality provides through IEP and 504 or other board decisions. At this point, allowing a backpack mail for continuation is a valid option. Providing studio teaching where required could be an option, but it still must be conditional. And we need to have some discussion as to what are the conditions, because it cannot be, I choose. There is no support for an I choose that my child be an at-home learner, unless there is a reason for exceptionality.
And I would say that exceptionality of medical should extend to their, and vaccinations should extend to their family as well. If there are students who have siblings who cannot be vaccinated because of age requirements, or they have family members who live with them that are immunocompromised, as I know we have students in this building who have parents who are undergoing cancer treatments at this time, where it may not be safe for them to attend in person, that should be considered a condition.
Thank you. Exactly. I'm with you.
I got it. We're on the same page now.
This is a condition that can be recognized effectively not volition, it's not I choose. We got some nodding of understanding the differences. Of all my fellow board members, how do we say it properly? Ain't nothing going to happen without a motion.
I make a motion to add a conditional, I didn't pre-word this, to add conditional virtual learning for students who have not yet completed the vaccine schedule, have family members who are ineligible for vaccination or are immunocompromised, I think I'm going to end it there.
There, I would say that there needs to be an end date to that, and also that the first clause about students who have not yet been vaccinated, that has to have an end date to it, because that could be true for weeks and months.
Through the end of the school year.
And is that only virtual, or are we considering a backpack exchange?
I'd like to see a second before we get into a discussion of something that remains undefined. Do we have a second for a motion as conditioned by Mrs. Sherman that runs to the end of the school year? Not hearing a second. Is there any way in which you would wish to change the motion?
Don was about to speak.
Well, I was going to speak to a change in.
Thank you.
Please go ahead and do so.
No. Not hearing a second, do you have a different motion that we should be considering? Which could be that motion amended on time.
I would just like to amend that, her motion to include the date of January 20th for the vaccination, instead of being open ended through the end of the year.
All right. I could amend it to who have not, for students who have not been able to complete their vaccination schedule until January 20th of 2022, have siblings who are not yet eligible for vaccination, the option would be available until those siblings are eligible are eligible for their vaccination.
Oh, thank you. Was there a period yet?
Or have immunocompromised family members. I don't know how to put a date on immunocompromised family members. That's where I'm.
I heard you say in your proposal, your motion, that families that have children who have siblings who are not yet eligible for vaccination, you're extending this concept until children from the age of birth to 5 are eligible for vaccination.
Well, it'll likely be 6 months to 4 years would be my guess. That's typical. That's what I've been hearing.
You've got a younger time frame than school age.
Correct. They're vulnerable at home and then immunocompromised.
So with that condition, because you've really now named 3 different conditions, with that condition, that could be true that could be months and months. That could go beyond the end of the school year, correct?
Correct.
Could be years and years, beyond 4 years.
Mrs. Van Meer, did you pen that down?
I'm attempting.
Is there a second to the motion that was made?
Second.
We have a motion and a second, and we're going to hear what Mrs. Van Meer has penned.
So your motion is to approve virtual learning for under the conditions of family members in a household not eligible for vaccination or who have immunocompromised and for students not yet completing their full vaccination status until January 20th of 2022.
Write it down. I did not write it down. I wasn't that prepared, sorry. For students who have not been able to complete their vaccination series by January 20th, 2022. Students with family members, with immediate family members, I'm sorry, we'll specify that, immediate family members who are not yet eligible for vaccination until they are eligible for vaccination, or immediate family members who are immunocompromised. And I don't know what the immunocompromised, how to pick a date on that. That's, I end there because I don't know how to set a date.
Can you define immediate household or immediate family?
Was this, as this was read, excuse me, Mrs. Ward, to our second, are you still seconding what Mrs. Sherman has just stated as her motion?
I guess I would like clarification on an end date for the immunocompromised.
You get to second what she said. If you don't want to second it, don't second it, and it will die. And then you can go for clarification for a restatement.
I'd like a clarification for restatement.
Is there a second to Mrs. Sherman's motion? Seeing none?
Second.
No, you want the clarification now, though.
Yes.
I think, Mrs. Sherman, as you work on this, for the acceptance of other board members, please keep their ears in mind. And open-endedness is problematic. A consideration of children and even seniors, hello, that are not within our school environment becomes problematic. It's real in the community, but becomes problematic for school mandating and our belief in our control system. I perceive your desire for that, but the functionality of it is, I'll kill the word again, problematic. Please, as you're thinking about a motion, keep it within the realm of our school population and its immediacy. We've heard from a parent of an immunocompromised child, one who is in complex care, one who have other conditions. And I think that's the heart of what you want to address. I hope.
Well, I want them to have it too, certainly, but I think there are others that are asking for it that also have legitimate claims to make the request due to ineligibility of immediate family members or immunocompromised immediate family members. And I guess it's what I'm hearing from this board is that you don't care about those folks, and we're going to only worry about the children in this building and their time frame for vaccination.
Your characterization of our thought processes is inaccurate and semi-offensive. Please don't make that characterization. Speak to the desire that you wish to accomplish in your motion, and we will consider it.
Well, I made the motion already and it wasn't seconded, so it clearly was not.
Is there another motion?
I would make a motion that we have a condition for students in grades K through 6 who have not completed their vaccine cycle by January 20th to have the option for remote learning.
Is there a second?
Until what time?
January 20th.
We have a motion by Ward and a second by Carrier to provide remote education for children in K-6 who have not completed their vaccination cycle by January 20th.
Who have not completed their vaccination cycle by January 20th and then to end by January 20th, if that makes sense, until January 20th.
who are not fully vaccinated by January 20th. Fully in the CDC.
Meaning that by January 20th, their vaccine status should be complete and they can resume in-person learning.
Mrs. Carey, did you understand that as a second? We have a motion and a second to provide remote education to children in K-6 who have not completed their full vaccination by January 20th.
Or is it until January 20th?
That the remote learning extend through January 20th.
Let's restate it then, because I don't think it's clear. I did not state it clearly. That we provide remote education through January 20th. Change the word. Through January 20th for children who have not completed their vaccination by that date.
Just so you know, the 20th is a Thursday. In case that makes a difference for you. I'm just telling you.
Mrs. Carrier, are you still a second? We have a motion by Ward, a second by Carrier to provide remote education to until January 20th for children K-6 who have not completed their full vaccination. Are there any questions or comments about the motion?
Would that include backpacking program as well?
Right, I said remote, which in my mind includes backpack mail or studio learning.
Several options, administrative parent. It could be a parent would not choose all the technologies, backpack fits.
And who would make that choice? That's a parent choice to get a virtual, or a parent choice or administration choice to provide a backpack program?
That's a conversation, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think.
Okay.
I would just say that if we're providing virtual education for families, it would include a backpack program as necessary to ensure that students are delivered with the supplies they need to actively participate in the classroom virtually.
Yes, and I acknowledge that, and I realize that that could be an additional burden. However, I would think that the coordination of the effort would hopefully be much smaller than it was when we were mid all remote learning. Now, I'm not trying to gloss over the fact that that is a further challenge to this, but hopefully it could be implemented with smaller personnel investment.
Board has a motion before it. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
May I see a show of hands? The ayes? The opposition? Opposed? The motion passes.
I'd like to make another motion for consideration, please. I would make a motion to allow a virtual learning option, a conditional option for families who have immediate family members who are not eligible for vaccination or are immunocompromised until a time when viral rates are significantly declining.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. The motion is provide remote education to families who have immunocompromised members.
Or immediate family members who are not eligible for vaccination or are immunocompromised until viral activity rates are significantly declining.
Did I talk slow enough that time? Okay.
As an aside, in the future, we will provide an opportunity, if not a requirement, that you pen out your motions, even if it takes time. I am writing a motion and you submit it. We have a motion. Any conversation or question about the motion? Mr. Piala?
No.
I'll make comment. This is asking us to assume the responsibility for children who are not yet of school age and for, I'll set that aside, of not yet of school age I think that we already have expressed our interest in children who, and family members who are immunocompromised. But I have a problem with the until the end of, sorry, it could go endemic, the end of time. I see no end in this motion. Clearly, hopefully, but I don't see, I can point. This creates a new practice that becomes institutionalized. Any other comments from the board?
I will only say that I feel for people who are dealing with this situation. I am one of them. I have a child who is 9 months old. I have to acknowledge as a school board member that we are a board of education, that people who want to continue to have a widespread mask mandate or to make a decision like this, I understand, I really, really do. My issue is that this is not the Door County Board of Supervisors. This is not a municipality. We are not state legislature. We're not here to make endemic or panacea decisions for everybody. I know that that comes across, and you have stated very clearly, Mrs. Sherman, that you think that makes us unfeeling and cruel to the families who are dealing with this. And I do not agree. I think that we are in our lane. We are school board. We are concerned with the people who are in this building every day. That's our job. That does not mean I'm shirking responsibility for what we do here. It is our responsibility to take care of the people in this building. And as a side note, I know that I'm reading chat online as we are going through this discussion, and I understand that the why can't we just mask until January 20th is something that people are saying. I understand that based on the agenda and the way that we could operate tonight. That was the way that this has come. If we were able to amend the date, I think that probably would have happened, at least in my respect. But just to circle back, I don't think this makes us ununderstanding of the things that other families are going through and the fact that they are still vulnerable to this disease. But it is our job as school board members to be a board of education.
Any other board comments regarding this motion? And we'll call the question. All those board members in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Nay. Nay.
Show of hands, please. Aye. Pardon me. I was demonstrating. Aye. Thank you. Nay. The motion is defeated. Is there any other motion or business to be considered under this agenda item this evening? Hearing none?
I move to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much for your attendance this evening.